702.
Refill us on Twitter
at
Mpakanyane.
And make that hashtag weekend breakfast. Time now to check in with our human potential and parenting expert, Nikki Bush. She's a speaker, a writer, enthusiastic absolutely about upskilling ourselves and upskilling our children as well. Nikki, good morning.
Good morning, Rafi Ware.
So, Nikki, today we're talking about how to keep learners motivated in times of uncertainty. The Department of Basic Education on Thursday decided to allow only grade R, 6 and 11 learners back to school this coming Monday. So that means that only 3 of the 7 grades that were originally scheduled to return on Monday will now return. So if your child is outside of those grades that are allowed back to school, I know I was feeling the pinch of how to keep my little one motivated and interested while sitting and working remotely. Give us some tips, because it cannot be easy, especially when you're into feeling your own lockdown fatigue and your own work from home fatigue.
Sure. This lockdown fatigue and feelings of burnout are actually very, very real, if you're aware.
Yeah.
And what I'm concerned about more than the children actually is parent burnout and teacher burnout. And I've spent the last 24 hours chatting to teachers in government schools.
Sure.
And they just talk about the fact that, the government makes a decision or a decree. They all go into meetings, they create protocols, they communicate these protocols to parents. And then the next thing, we have the minister on the news changing everything before even telling the schools.
Mm.
So it's a very, very charged, highly charged situation with teachers who are already pushed to the limit in terms of not having had holidays, not having, had time to recover, having scrabbling to, get education online if they can. The teacher I was chatting to yesterday was saying that she's actually using WhatsApp.
Yeah.
With the learners, and she's actually finding that quite flexible. She's having to take into account that in many homes there just aren't devices other than maybe one cell phone.
Exactly. Yeah.
And in fact, quite interestingly, Rafiwa, she's a high school teacher.
Yeah.
And she was saying that she puts all the curriculum, her lessons and everything, up between 6 p.m. and midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, what's very interesting, and here's a plus, actually, for the online learning kind of situation. Teenagers are often slow to wake in the morning. They like to get up at around 8 or 9. Their body rhythms with the hormones that are pumping.
Sure.
They need to get up later in the morning, and they go to bed much later at night. And she was saying she's finding that there's actually quite a lot of engagement because they're wired for activity at night. Isn't that interesting? And so in a way, this has played to where they are hormonally, physically, etc.
Yeah.
She's using WhatsApp. And I said to her, so how do the children feedback what they've done? And she said, well, they have to write everything down, and they're going to hand it in when they come back to school. So now take that situation.
Sure.
Where those kids are not coming back to school for yet another month.
So it's all going to pile up, and those teachers are going to have to deal with stacks of marking to
marking.
Be done.
Yeah. Exactly.
Huge consideration. So, yeah.
Sure. It's, we have to think even beyond our children here, the impact on everybody. But, it's. I think right now we're going to be dealing with children who are maybe feeling disappointed,
mm-hmm.
maybe a bit depressed.
Sure.
The anxiety. I was with somebody yesterday chatting to her about her own children who are, I think, around 8 and 6. And the little girl, when mommy goes to work, spends the whole day crying at home.
Worried about the mom.
Worried about the mom. And she said to me, she herself has been fairly hysterical and over the top in terms of her fears around this disease.
Mm.
And I think what is probably something that would be useful to share this morning is that we need to be so careful of not allowing our fear to get in our way. I know we're being marinated in a media frenzy of fear and panic. But we still need to keep perspective that this virus is not going to come near to infecting the number of people who would get the normal flu. Or we won't see the number of deaths that we would see with the normal flu. So I think it's a difficult one, but we have to keep a reference point. And, you know, with the normal flu, we didn't wear masks, we didn't panic, we didn't shut down schools. And in fact, probably the safest place for your children right now is back at school. But here we are. We don't have that luxury because the government has decided. And so it's a tricky, tricky one. So the big thing to keep reminding our children is how much they've learnt away from school. You know, we've been chatting in this forum around chores and life skills and the things that actually help children feel competent and confident. And allowing children to do stuff around the home is one of those things. So question to parents out there, have they been invitational and been inviting their children to help do those things?
So, you know, you've laid out quite a lot of things in terms of the scenario and how to maintain a reference point. But for those people, you know, you've laid out your specific, your own North Star about how you keep this pandemic in perspective. A lot of people basically feeling very, very differently, that there's a bigger consideration, right? That we don't know what the long-term sort of ramifications are, and we don't quite understand the nature of this thing. So if you as a parent are that panicked, are that nervous, I mean, we were just talking about long haulers, COVID-19 yeah. long haulers with Dr. Nyati earlier on the show today. How do you, within your small sphere of influence, keep a child motivated, able to keep the eye on the prize, which is you still need to learn, you still need to study, because you will come through this and you still have to secure your own future? How do you essentially put sort of blinders on, as you might a racing horse, for your child and still make sure that they focus on their education?
So I think we got to start off by sitting down with our kids, if they're old enough to do this, of course, and this would be probably from around the age of 10, where you can talk about, so let's see what we can control in this situation, and let's see what we can't control. Those things we can't control, we actually can't waste energy on. We need to look at what we can control. And we go back to some real basics of skills, attitude, and work rate. And it's a little bit like, in a way, we've almost got to create our own form of pressure to perform. Mm-hmm. Because it's quite difficult at the moment for children to, you know, they're not in a social group, and they learn better in groups, you know, because there's that little bit of competition. We're all doing the same thing. I mean, I had a son who hated doing homework, for example. And he'd come home from school and go, he'd whinge and whine and complain about doing homework until he went to boarding school. And when he was at boarding school, he never complained about homework ever. Why? Because all 100 or 200 boys were doing homework at the same time. So the group dynamic kicked in. And that was so helpful, because he wasn't the only one. He didn't feel victimized by doing homework. It's such an interesting dynamic, that, isn't it? So what we might have to start doing, you know, as this is continuing for longer than expected, is maybe forming cluster groups with other families. Not that you can necessarily see each other, but a little bit like with homeschooling, we would form a group of parents where almost the kids can check in with each other, and the parents maybe are part of the group, and that there is that little bit of group participation, group dynamic, group pressure. Have you finished your homework? Or how quickly did that lesson take for you to get through? You know, maybe some kind of challenges. You might have to use reward charts at this point. You know how we use reward charts for learning how to pick up your towel and hang it up?
Yeah.
I think a reward chart at this point may be necessary for finishing your work for the day, and then you get a star or you get a whatever, and you can actually reward children with tiny little things. You don't have to spend a lot of money. You know, it could be a lollipop. It could be a fizzer. Sure. It could be something small. Or they could be building up to something bigger.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the week, something bigger. I think creating short-term goals for our children right now is going to be important. You know how you need to get to this step, and then you need to get to that one, and then you need to get to that. When you've done those three, then this is what happens.
It sounds like a really, really useful intervention. But I'm curious to find out. I had a couple of conversations with some educators as well this week, and in high schools. And what seemed to feature a lot is that with their interactions with learners was a certain kind of resentment now kicking in, that they were being deprived of the sort of natural or expected milestones, right? Expected milestones, whether it would be certain physical activities, interactions, whether it would be the prospect of a matric dance at the end of the year, just a resentment that what they thought was a short period of 21 days in lockdown, or a few weeks or maybe a month or two of, you know, living under certain constraints, is now going to be an indefinite sort of way of life until at least there's a vaccine, right? How do you curb that and deal with that and resolve that? Because it can't be easy. Intellectually, they understand what's happening. Emotionally, incredibly frustrated.
Incredibly frustrated. And then the words that I picked out, remember we spoke about that emotion wheel last week. And I was looking at it this morning and thinking, how might these kids be feeling, especially the older ones, as you say? And I came up with disillusioned, dismayed, shocked, maybe out of control, apathetic, because that's, I think, probably almost one of the biggest fears, is that they'll just become apathetic and won't do anything. Worried, nervous, betrayed, powerless.
Sure.
And that's a tough one when you feel completely powerless and out of control. So we're talking, external disruption where things are out of our control will cause us to feel all of those things. And the only way to actually regain control there is almost to internally start disrupting ourselves, to choose to do things differently. So we might need to turn the day upside down. For example, I mean, I know this sounds like a really weird concept, but if we keep trying to see the day as a normal day, it isn't a normal day anymore, is it?
Mm-hmm.
It really is a different kind of a day. We are going to have to start doing the things. Remember at the beginning of lockdown, we spoke about things like running up and down stairs, or using a skipping rope, or going for a walk or going for a run. We actually are going to have to commit to those things, recommit to them again. I think we got a bit lazy in the last few weeks thinking we'd, you know, get out of lockdown, get back to school.
Sure.
Motion shifts emotion. And so movement is going to be very important to keep sanity, to keep our health, to keep our mental health, whether we're parents or children or teachers. So that's an important part of holding ourselves together at this point in time. And then talk. I say this to all my audiences, this is not a time to isolate yourself. And it's easy when you feel depressed to withdraw. But actually you almost need to do the opposite. And we need to have people we can talk to, vent with, to actually label those feelings is far more helpful than swallowing them and internalizing what is actually indigestible. And I would say at the moment, some kind of visual art where kids are shown how to express their emotions on paper through color, through pictures, is also going to be important. We almost need a series of very creative emotional, mental interventions at this time. Because as you said, we don't know how long this is going to go on for. This is an indefinite thing without a full stop.
Yes.
It will only have a full stop when the full stop appears. And that is tough. So it's difficult. We don't have clear answers here. There are no 100% clear solutions of what we should be doing with our children. I hope I've given a few hooks for parents to buy into.
Well,
but
our full
again, don't talk in absolutes to your children.
Yeah.
Don't talk in absolutes on this date.
Absolutely.
Because they could get disappointed yet again, this is a fluid situation.
So our full stop is right on the horizon. Let's dip into the Toy Talk review. You are looking at the Melissa and Doug numbers activity pad this week.
Yes, so that is something else that people with children in primary school and preschool can do, is play with your children at this time. Play is such a way to reduce stress and to learn at the same time. So I picked the Melissa and Doug numbers activity pad and alphabet activity pad this morning, and they really are magnificent. They are beautiful, 115 Rand, very, very inexpensive on Takealot and in Polly Potter's toy stores, amongst others. And they've got 20 pages of activities that are all sound and educationally based, 250 stickers, colouring activities, dot-to-dot activities, maze activities, and absolutely beautiful in that A3 format, mm-hmm. So a big format activity pad that will keep your kids going and learning in a sound way and entertained at the same time.
All right, fantastic stuff. Nikki, we'll catch up again next week. You keep well until then.
Thanks so much. You too, Rafuwe.
All right, that's a human potential and a parenting expert, Nikki Bush.